Thanks, Spiro, for the introduction. Okay, so as Spiro said, the title of my talk is A Theorem of Existence. For asymptotically Clabiel manifolds. And everything I'm going to talk about today is joint work with Hayo Hine from Imperial College London. Okay, so let me begin by clarifying what I mean by the term Clabiel in the title of my talk. So for me, Clabiel would just be Ricci flat Kähler. So in particular, a Clabiel manifold will just be a Ricci flat Kähler manifold, and a Clabiel metric will just be a Ricci flat Kähler metric. Okay, so let me begin with some motivation for the problem that I want to talk about today. So what we eventually want to talk about is the existence of Clabiel metrics, so non-compact Kähler manifolds. So let me begin with the discussion of the compact case, okay, just briefly. So suppose that M is a compact Kähler manifold. Then we know that a necessary condition for M, to admit a Clabiel metric is that up to covering some covering of M admits a global holomorphic volume form. Okay? So this is just equivalent to saying that the first Chern class is So this is just equivalent to saying that the first Chern class of M vanishes. So let me also clarify what I mean by a global holomorphic volume form. So I'll denote my global holomorphic volume forms by omega. And these guys are just N0 forms. They're nowhere vanishing. And they're also closed. Okay? Now, in 1957, Calabi conjectured that the converse of this statement was true. So more precisely, Calabi conjectured the following. So I'm just going to write down a simplified version of the Calabi conjecture for the purposes of this talk. So Calabi conjectured, if a compact Kähler manifold admits a global holomorphic volume form, then in each Kähler class of the manifold, there exists a unique Clabiel metric admits omega. So let me just denote it by omega. Then each Kähler class of M, so I need a bit more chalk as well, of M admits a unique Clabiel metric. Okay, now regarding the uniqueness part of this conjecture, Clabiel himself proved the uniqueness part using an integration by parts argument. So this is proved by Clabiel. And regarding the existence of a Clabiel metric omega prime inside some Kähler class omega. So this here is equivalent. So this problem can be formulated in terms of solving a complex PDE called the complex Monge-Napier equation. So is equivalent to solving the complex Monge-Napier equation. And as we know, Yao solved this equation on a compact Kähler manifold using the continuity method. And in doing so, he solved the existence part of the Calabi conjecture for compact Kähler manifolds. Therefore, a compact Kähler manifold, so therefore we have necessary and sufficient conditions for a compact Kähler manifold to admit a Clabiel metric. So a compact Kähler manifold admits a Clabiel metric if and only if some covering of M admits a global holomorphic volume form omega. So this here is an if and only if, okay? Now, with the resolution of the Calabi conjecture in the compact case, it's natural to ask whether or not there exists an extension of the Calabi conjecture to non-compact Kähler manifolds. So what we need is an analog of the Calabi conjecture for non-compact Kähler manifolds. So the simplest analog would just be taken by replacing compact with non-compact in the statement of the Calabi conjecture that I've written down here. So let me just write, Kähler manifold. Okay, and let me also rephrase this statement in terms of a question rather than an assertion. So instead of saying M admits each Kähler class of M, so when does each Kähler class of M admit a unique Clabiel metric? When does each Kähler class of M admit a Clabiel metric? So where's my rubber? Here it is. No, here it is, yeah. Okay, so now unfortunately there exist examples of non-compact Kähler manifolds with trivial canonical bundle that do not admit Clabiel metrics. So for example, we've got a known example, which is if you take P2 and remove three hyperplanes passing through a point, then this guy does not admit a complete Clabiel metric. But so this should be a first indication that this question is quite difficult. And it also gives us a first answer to this question, in the sense that when does each Keeler class of M admit a unique clavimetric? Not always, okay? Okay, and then the second point I want to say is that in the literature there exists many examples of non-compact clavium manifolds displaying a wide variety of different asymptotics at infinity. So fortunately, for lack of time, I don't have time to give you a list. We'll talk about some later on. But the implication from all this is that basically this question is too hard to answer in full generality. Okay? So we got to simplify this question. So how do we simplify this question? So there's two natural ways to do this. You can either prescribe the volume growth of the metrics that you want to consider in the statement that I've written down here, or you can actually be more precise and you can prescribe the actual volume growth, or you can prescribe the actual asymptotics of the metric that you want to consider. Okay? Now, so in some sense, we're providing boundary conditions for the clavium metrics in this statement, just to simplify it. Okay? Now, if you're given, so if MG is a non-compact Ricci flat and Ricci flat Riemannian manifold, then the assumption of Ricci flatness has consequences for the volume growth of balls in M. So the volume growth of a ball of radius R about any point X in the manifold has to grow at least linearly, and it can't grow faster than a ball in the Euclidean space of the same dimension. It can't grow faster than the volume of a ball in the Euclidean space of the same real dimension. So suppose that M is real dimension M. Yeah, so the volume growth of a ball in a non-compact Ricci flat manifold has to be at least linear and can't grow faster than Euclidean space. Okay. Now, so let me just explain these inequalities. So this here follows from a result of Yao, and this final inequality is just by the Bishop-Gromov comparison theorem. Okay. So let me get some more chalk. Okay. And as it turns out, clavium metrics exhibiting this maximal volume growth tend to be simplest, okay? And asymptotically conical clavium manifolds have Euclidean volume growth, basically because they resemble a cone outside some compact set. So at least heuristically, one would suspect that the easiest extension of the Clabby conjecture for compact manifolds to non-compact manifolds is to state it for asymptotically conical Clabby-L manifolds. Okay, so this is precisely what we do. So let me next tell you what an asymptotically conical Clabby-L manifold is, and we'll talk about some examples as well. So I just want to keep an eye on time there. So I'll keep that question up as well. So an asymptotically conical Clabby-L manifold is basically a manifold with a global holomorphic volume form and a Ricci flat metric, and both the complex structure and the Ricci flat metric have to resemble a Clabby-L cone outside some compact set. So we say that M is asymptotically conical Clabby-L with rate beta strictly less than zero if, so I'm going to give you a picture definition. So M is a non-compact Keeler manifold. It's got a global holomorphic volume form omega, and a Clabby-L metric G. So the Ricci of G is equal to zero. So we also require the existence of a Clabby-L cone, which also emits a global holomorphic volume form omega zero, and a Clabby-L cone metric G zero. So this is a Clabby-L cone. And we require that the norm of omega zero with respect to G zero is constant. So I'm getting through this chart rightly. And the norm of omega zero with respect to G zero is constant. And what we also require is the existence of a diffeomorphism outside on the complement of a compact subset of M and on a complement of the compact subset of the cone C. And with respect to this diffeomorphism, we require that the holomorphic volume form on the non-compact manifold and the holomorphic volume form omega on the cone to be asymptotic. And the same also for the Ricci flat metric G on the non-compact manifold and the Ricci flat cone metric G0 on the cone. So let me state this more precisely. So let nabla 0 be the Levi-Civita connection of G0. Then we require the difference between the holomorphic volume forms and their derivatives with respect to the Clabby-L cone metric G0 to be equal to O of R to the beta minus K. So R here is the radius function on the cone. And we also require the norm of the difference between G and G0 and their derivatives to be equal to big O of R to the beta minus K. For this is for all K greater than or equal to 0. So this is just a precise way of saying that this non-compact Clabio manifold resembles a cone outside a compact set. Okay, so let me... omega zero determines a complex structure, right? So it follows as a corollary of these asymptotics that is also true for the complex structure. Okay, so now that I've told you what asymptotically conical Clabio manifold is, let me give you one or two examples. Okay, so the first example of a asymptotically conical Clabio manifolds can be constructed from the Kony fold. So examples. So the Kony fold is defined as the affine quadric. The sum of the zi squareds is equal to zero inside C4. So this here is an example of a Clabio cone, and it emits an explicit Clabio cone structure. Now, if you're given a singular, this cone is singular at the origin. Now, in general, if you're given a singular, if you're given an affine Clabio cone, in general, there exists two ways to fix the singularity. So one can either take a Krepent resolution of the cone, or one can either take a smoothing, by which I mean to form the defining equations of the cone in such a way that you obtain a smooth affine variety, okay? Now, in general, a general affine Clabio cone may not admit a smoothing or a Krepent resolution, but this example does. It emits both a smoothing and a resolution. So the Krepent resolution is called a small resolution, and you obtain it by replacing the singularity here with a P1. This is a small resolution, and this here is a P1. And we also have a smoothing defined as the affine quadric. The sum of the zi squared is equal to 1 inside C4. Okay. So due to the fact that these non-compact Kähler manifolds were obtained as some desingularization of the cone, it's natural to ask, do these guys emit Clabio metrics which resemble the Clabio metric on this cone at infinity? So i.e., do these guys emit asymptotically conical Clabio metrics? So the answer is yes. So these are explicit examples, and they were constructed by Candelas and DeLossa. Okay? And DeLossa. Okay. So let me just remark that this affine quadric is biholomorphic to the cotangent bundle of S3. And the Clabio cone in this guy fits into a family of this asymptotically conical Clabio manifold fits into a family of, I'll just write it here, asymptotically conical Clabio manifolds. So in the cotangent bundle of Sn, Stenzel constructed explicit examples of asymptotically conical Clabio manifolds. So with this notion of asymptotically conical Clabio, let me state a simplified version of this problem. So let me state a simplified version of this problem. So just while you're waiting, just have a look at that definition there. Make sure you understand that. So this guy's rate -3, and this guy's rate -2. Okay, and then this guy's explicit as well, -n/(a-1) or something. Is there any other questions? Okay, so let me write down a simplified version of the question I just rubbed off. So suppose you've got a non-compact Kähler manifold M with a global holomorphic volume form omega. And suppose you've got a Clabio cone C. And suppose you've got a diffeomorphism outside some compact subset of M and a compact subset of C. So C is a Clabio cone. So we've got a holomorphic volume form omega 0. And we've got a Clabio cone metric G 0. And the norm of omega 0 with respect to G 0 is constant. Okay, and we assume that, so again, nabla 0 is a Levi-Civita connection of G 0. And we assume that the norm of the difference between the holomorphic volume forms is equal to O of R to the beta minus K for some beta strictly less than 0 and for all K greater than or equal to 0. So basically, we have got a non-compact Kähler manifold whose complex structure resembles that on a cone outside some compact set. So this is a necessary condition for M to admit an asymptotically conical Clabio metric. So if you just look at the definition. So then the question we ask is, does each Kähler class of M admit a unique asymptotically conical Clabio manifold? So does each Kähler class of M admit a unique asymptotically? So this is quite an abstract question, okay? So let me consider one or two particular cases.
So let me consider one or two particular cases of this.
So in this example, we obtained a non-compact Kähler manifold that resembles that on the cone by taking a Krepin resolution and a smoothing. So one can ask, in general, if I'm given a Krepin resolution or a smoothing of an affine Clabial cone, does there exist an asymptotically conical Clabial metric on that guy? So in the case of a Krepin, so in terms of this picture here, a Krepin resolution will actually be biholomorphic to the cone outside a compact set. So I want to talk about some particular cases. So the first case, if you're a Krepin, so if M is a Krepin resolution of C, then you're actually biholomorphic to the cone outside a compact set. So the question is, does each Kähler class of M admit a unique asymptotically conical Clabial metric? So the answer is yes. So existence, well, so this problem was solved by Goto and Craig van Covering, and it showed that there exists an asymptotically conical Clabial metric in each Kähler class of M. Let me just write Kähler class, okay? Everyone knows what that means. Okay, and as for the smoothing, so whenever M is a smoothing, you're no longer biholomorphic. Whenever M is a smoothing of C, you're no longer biholomorphic to the cone outside a compact set. You're only diffeomorphic, but the complex structures are still asymptotic at some rate. And so you can ask, so these are maybe extreme cases of this. And so you can ask, does M admit a unique asymptotically conical Clabial metric in each Kähler class? So in my thesis, I showed that on smoothings of complete, I showed that there exists an asymptotically conical Clabial metric on smoothings of complete intersection Clabial cones. So complete intersection Clabial cones always admit a smoothing. Complete intersection Clabial cones. So in these two particular cases, we've kind of got a rough answer. We can construct asymptotically conical Clabial metrics in, well, every Kähler class here, and we've got existence in this case, okay? So a third case I want to talk about incorporates both these two examples and is actually more general. So I'm going to rub this off over here, right? So everyone's had a good look at this, right? So the third case is more general than these two. So let me just rub this off. So consider a pair XD. Where X is a compact Kähler orbifold. So if you're not familiar with orbifolds, you can just pretend everything's smooth, okay? But we're really working in the orbifold category. So X is a compact Kähler orbifold. So D is a codimension one suborbifold. One suborbifold of X. And then D contains the singularities of X. Okay? So X without D is smooth. And we also have the requirement that D is an anti-canonical divisor inside X. So this equality should be interpreted in the orbifold category. So the anti-canonical bundle is an orbi bundle. D is a Bailey divisor. But if you're not familiar with this, you can just pretend everything's smooth here. Okay, and we require alpha to be greater than or equal to 2. So under these assumptions, X without D is smooth. Okay, because D contains the singularities of X. And you also know that X without D admits a global holomorphic volume form because D is not, you just take a nowhere vanishing section. You just take a defining section of this orbi bundle that vanishes along MD to order alpha. So this guy admits a global, omega, right? Omega. So if you compare these hypotheses to this picture here, you've got, so M is equal to X without D. So I'm going to get on to the cone in a wee minute. But M is equal to X without D is smooth and admits a global holomorphic volume form omega. So let me now talk about what the cone is. So get rid of this. So now let me assume that D is a Kähler-Einstein Fano manifold or orbifold. It's Kähler-Einstein Fano. So the Fano-ness assumption follows from this equality here, okay, because alpha is greater than or equal to 2. So the fact that D is Kähler-Einstein
There goes my chalk. Let's get some more. So the fact that D is Keeler-Einstein funnel implies by something called the Calabi-Einsatz. So unfortunately, I don't have time to go into the details of the Calabi-Einsatz. But the blowdown of the zero section of the canonical bundle of D is a Calabi-Yau cone. Okay. So let me just say some stuff to explain this. So the blowdown of the zero section of the canonical bundle of D carries a tautological holomorphic volume form. Okay, so that's, though it will be omega zero. And the Calabi-Yau cone metric on this cone is built from the Keeler-Einstein Fano metric, from the Keeler-Einstein metric on D. Okay, now via the adjunction formula, you know that the canonical bundle of D is equal to alpha minus one. Oh, the canonical bundle of canonical bundle of D is equal to alpha minus one times the conormal bundle of D. So due to the fact that this guy is a Calabi-Yau cone, we can lift the Calabi-Yau cone structure in this guy to a Calabi-Yau cone structure on this guy. So this implies that the blowdown of the zero section of the conormal bundle of D is a Calabi-Yau cone. So you just lift the Calabi-Yau cone metric on this guy and the holomorphic volume form in this guy to a Calabi-Yau cone metric in this guy and a holomorphic volume form in this guy to turn this guy into a Calabi-Yau cone. So seeing this, so under these assumptions, I obtain this picture with M is equal to X without D. C is equal to the blowdown of the zero section of the conormal bundle of D and X. And the diffeomorphism is induced by the exponential map. Okay? And you can also compute, so this guy is a holomorphic volume form. This guy's got a holomorphic volume form. So you can compute the rate of convergence of the holomorphic volume forms. And you find that beta is equal to minus n divided by alpha minus 1, where m is of complex dimension n. Okay? So under these assumptions, although it's not obvious at first, you see that we obtain naturally this picture. Okay? And so one can ask, in this situation, does there exist a unique asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric in each Keeler class of does there exist a unique asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric in each Keeler class of X without D? Okay, now the biggest theorem of existence for the existence of Calabi-Yau metrics under these assumptions was proved by Professor Tian and Yao back in the early 90s. And they have proved that under these assumptions, let me just get rid of this. So they've proved that. Okay, so under these assumptions, you can ask, does there exist a unique asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric in each Keeler class, in each Keeler class of M? Class of M. Okay, and then I'm just going to go over to this board. And the biggest theorem of existence thus far was proved by Professor Tian and Yao. And they showed that under some extra technical assumptions on X and D, plus some extra technical assumptions, there exists a complete... Oh, I need more chalk. There we go. Get some more. So there exists a complete Calabi-Yau metric on X without D. Calabi-Yau. There exists a complete Calabi-Yau metric on X without D with Euclidean volume growth. Euclidean volume growth. Volume growth. So in this joint work with Hayo, we were able to answer this question to a degree of generality. So the question is, does each Keeler class of M admit a unique asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric? So we can show the answer is yes for these guys called mu compactly supported Keeler forms. So it's not too important what they are. But the point is Keeler, for mu compactly supported Keeler classes. So it doesn't really matter what they are. So this here was by myself and Hayo and Hein. But the point is that under these assumptions on X without D, you can show that every Keeler class is mu compactly supported. So therefore, as a corollary of our theorem, we obtain the following refinement of Professor Tian and Yao's theorem, which is that, this is kind of work in progress, but basically the smooth case is dealt with, and we're just working out the details for the overflow case. And the statement is, there exists a unique asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric with a specified rate of convergence in each Keeler class. In each Keeler class. Okay, so let me just make a few observations in each Keeler class of X without D. So let me just make a few remarks between the statement of our theorem and the statement of Professor Tian and Yao's theorem. So basically, we're able to remove these extra technical assumptions on X and D, and we're also able to get more refined asymptotics on the metrics that we construct in each Kähler class. And our proof might be probably a little bit simpler as well. But I guess it's not really up for me to judge that. But how long do I have left? OK, 4 minutes. OK, so that's a statement of our theorem. So let me say a few words about the proof. So basically, is there any questions? Well, do that at the end. So let me say a few. Statements about the proof. So the way we constructed our metrics is we solved the complex Monge-Ampere equation. So that I wrote down at the start of this talk. So I won't be needing that anymore. Okay, so we solved the complex Monge-Ampere equation. Omega plus I delta bar of phi to the n is equal to e to the f times omega to the n. So I just rubbed off my assumptions. But m is a non-compact manifold, and omega is a global holomorphic volume form. So we use the assumption that omega admits a global holomorphic volume form to write down. So f is the Ricci potential of omega. So the fact that m admits a global holomorphic volume form implies that you can write a global expression for the Ricci potential of m. So for the Ricci potential of omega, sorry. So f is equal to log of omega wedge omega bar divided by omega to the n. So if you can solve this equation, PDE for f, then omega plus I delta bar of phi will be a Calabi-Yau metric inside the Kähler class omega. Okay. Now the problem with this is that the existence theory for solutions to the complex Monge-Ampere equation on non-compact manifolds is not as straightforward as that for a. Well, it's not straightforward anyway. But the existence theory, as it stands, basically states that you can only solve this equation. So let me just write this down. So if this guy is asymptotically conical Kähler, then you can only solve this equation. There exists a solution to this equation to omega plus I delta bar of phi to the n is equal to e to the h omega to the n. So if h is equal to O of r to the minus 2 minus epsilon, where epsilon is strictly greater than 0. Okay? So you can only solve this equation if this function f goes to 0 at infinity. Okay? Now notice that the asymptotics of f depend on omega. Okay, so the point is, so the problem in all of this is constructing the initial metric omega in such a way that the Kähler potential will go to 0 as you go to infinity. So I should write down who this is for. So the existence theory was proved by Joyce. So there's a lot of authors. This is a combination of a lot of people. So Joyce, Craig Van Covering, Tianan Yao, Hayo Hein, and Hein as well. So you can only apply this existence theory if you can make this function f converge to 0. But the point is, the function at rate strictly faster than minus 2. But the point is, the asymptotics of f depend on omega. So the difficulty in all of this is not solving this, well, is setting up, the is constructing this Kähler metric omega in such a way that the Ricci potential of this guy goes to 0 at infinity at rate strictly faster than minus 2. So we were already given the existence theory here, so the analysis was already done in some sense. But the difficulty was constructing the background metric in each Kähler class in such a way that its Ricci potential converged to 0 at infinity. And we found that we can only do this for mu compactly supported Kähler classes. That I've just rubbed off. So for mu compactly supported Kähler classes, we could construct an appropriate background metric in such a way that the Ricci potential converged to 0, and then we could solve this equation to construct an asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric in each Kähler class. Okay, so that was kind of the principal difficulty. And as it turned out, we kind of think that every Kähler class is mu compactly supported anyway on an asymptotically conical guy. But we can't prove that yet. So yeah, I think 5 seconds to go. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks. This guy. So D is a codimension 1 suborbifold. So what that means is, if you take each point of D, then there exists a uniformizing chart such that the pre-image of D under this is smooth. So where's the question coming from? Yeah, so the, yeah, so the pre-image of D around each singularity, you can choose a uniformizing chart so that the pre-image is smooth. So that in particular implies that that D gives rise to an Orbi bundle on X. Okay, so Tian and Yao require extra assumptions. They require D to be almost ample, which means that the line bundle or the Orbi bundle induced by D, so if you take high enough tensor powers, then that defines a morphism from X into projective space, which is a biholomorphism in a neighborhood of D. And they also require a neatness assumption on X, which basically says that no compact holomorphic curve is it's an assumption on the topology of X, which is basically that no compact holomorphic curve in X is cohomologous to a curve inside D or something along them lines. But the main assumption, well, one of the assumptions is this almost ampleness condition that we were able to remove. But we think it's necessary, but we can't write down our proof yet. But yeah, does that answer your question? Yeah, so this is the point, right? So the precise statement of the theorem states that in each Kähler class, you've got a one-parameter family of Calabi-Yau metrics, okay? Now, for each fixed parameter, you're asymptotic to the cone, right? So you've got this Calabi-Yau cone, right? So you've got some Calabi-Yau metric omega, right? But you've actually got a family of Calabi-Yau metrics, C of omega. So for each choice of C here, right, you've got an asymptotically conical Calabi-Yau metric on the non-compact guy, which is asymptotic to the cone, to the metric C times omega on the Calabi-Yau cone. And the diffeomorphism is fixed in all of this. So we actually get this one parameter family of Calabi-Yau metrics in this. And for each parameter, you're diffeomorphic to a different, you're asymptotic to a different rescaling of the Calabi-Yau metric on the cone. So we think that what's really happening is that you're flowing along some vector field or something. So they might be the same, but we can't prove it. So if you see what I'm saying? So if you take the vector field, the radial vector field, R delta Lorentz in this guy, and you flow the co-metric along it, then you're just going to get different rescalings, right? So the point is, we think the same thing's happening on the asymptotically conical guy, but we can't prove it. It's true for Gucci-Hansen in some examples, and if you're Stein, it's also true. And if you're Krepin resolution, it's also true. But in the general case, we can't prove it. So this actually has applications. So there's a result of Yatming Chan, which basically said if you've got a compact if you have a compact Calabi-Yau with conical singularities, then you can smooth this guy if the singularities are modeled on Calabi-Yau cones. Then you assume that if this Calabi-Yau cone emits a smoothing, right, and you find the rate of convergence, if the rate of convergence of the Calabi-Yau metric on the non-compact, if the rate of convergence of the Calabi-Yau metric to its co-model is strictly less than -3, so you require B to be strictly less than -3. So we're talking about Calabi-Yau threefolds here with conical singularities. Then that there implies that you can actually smooth the guy. So this really refers to the theorem I had in the smoothing example. But basically, so this is a generalization of the smoothing example. And the estimates you get on the rates in this generalization is worse than the direct approach that you do in my thesis, right? Yeah, what's the rate here? So the rate here is, the max. It's a max of -2 and -n divided by alpha -1. So it also depends on whether the Kähler class is compactly supported or. But the point is, you can't so the rate can't be faster than the rate of convergence of the complex structures. Okay, and the key calculation in this theorem. It's computing the rate of convergence of the holomorphic volume forms on the non-compact guy and not on the cone, under the assumptions X without D. Yeah, so the estimates aren't good enough for this case, right? But in the smoothing case, you got to take a different diffeomorphism. So that's kind of different. Yeah, so if you've ordered me double points, so Spiro asked me about the smoothing of the coney fold. So the rate there is -3, right? So in this theorem of Yatming, if you've got a compact Calabi-Yau with ordinary double points, then you know from algebraic geometry there exists obstructions to be able to smooth this guy, right? So that's reflected by the fact that the rate is precisely -3. So that's why this rate minus 3 is critical. But so, for example, for other complete intersection Calabi-Yau cones, so the point is everyone expects these. So there's no examples of these compact Calabi-Yaus with conical singularities except orbifolds, right? So the point is, if these rates, but so the rates we compute are consistent with the existence of these guys. So that's really all we can say. But yeah, but so the construction there was different. So you smooth the guy, and then you take the projection as your diffeomorphism. And then the computation of the holomorphic volume forms there is different than the computation for this X without D case. Does that answer your question? Okay, thanks.